A la selección china de personas que presentan al mundo la antorcha olímpica se ha transformado en una lección de derechos humanos para la Unión Americana. Beatriz Salas amplía la información.
Decidir sobre quiénes serán los portadores de la antorcha en la ceremonia inaugural de los Juegos Olímpicos de Invierno en Pekín es la responsabilidad de China, y Estados Unidos no está en posición de hacer comentarios despectivos. Así respondió Pekín a la reciente interferencia de Washington, quien aseveró que la elección de China del atleta de la etnia Uyghur de Nijir Jilamujian para llevar la antorcha olímpica es un esfuerzo de Pekín para distraer la atención del llamado genocidio en la región de Xinjiang.
Los llamados comentarios de genocidio de Estados Unidos son la gran mentira del siglo y exponen su intento de politizar los Juegos Olímpicos de Invierno y su siniestra intención de utilizar el tema relacionado con Xinjiang para difamar a China.
China asimismo acusó a Estados Unidos de mentir de manera descarada sobre las minorías étnicas, mientras olvida sistemáticamente discriminaciones en su propio suelo.
Estados Unidos llevó a cabo un genocidio contra los nativos americanos en el pasado y ha discriminado sistemáticamente a las minorías raciales a largo plazo. La población de nativos americanos se ha desplomado de 5 millones a finales del siglo XV a unos 250 mil a principios del siglo XX, reduciéndose a una vigésima parte. ¿Qué es el genocidio? Las políticas que Estados Unidos ha impuesto a los nativos americanos son un verdadero genocidio.
Zhao, además de criticar la discriminación racial contra los africanos y asiáticos en Estados Unidos, dijo que elegir a un atleta de la etnia Uyghur muestra que la política de China de promover los deportes de invierno y mejorar la salud de las personas está beneficiando a individuos de todos los grupos étnicos y prueba que no existe discriminación.
Lo que Estados Unidos debería estar haciendo es revisar cuidadosamente sus propios crímenes históricos contra los nativos americanos y tomar medidas concretas para reducir la discriminación racial contra estas personas y otras minorías raciales, como los africanos y asiáticos.
China, en reiteradas ocasiones, ha instado a Estados Unidos a dejar de usar los asuntos vinculados con Xinjiang para difundir mentiras, interferir en los asuntos internos de China o intentar detener el desarrollo del país. Advierte que, de lo contrario, Pekín dará una respuesta más contundente a la luz del desarrollo de la situación. Beatriz Salas con información de Niloufar Shakuri, Hispan TV Noticias.
Migrantes de todos los rincones del mundo duermen bajo su mismo cielo estrellado. Me los encuentro en las calles, en los cines, en los supermercados, y el olor de sus comidas me embriaga de placer. Todos ellos son mis vecinos.
Y yo aquí vivo, bajo sus leyes domésticas, pago impuestos y mis manos producen la riqueza nacional.
Soy parte de esa comunidad que vive, trabaja y sueña con una mañana mejor para nuestras familias.
Casi todos migrantes como yo, casi todos soñadores como yo.
Trabajemos pues en la construcción de otra nación que nos haga dignos.
Seamos los arquitectos de nuestro sueño colectivo.
Esta radio no tiene comerciales porque tú nos apoyas. Si ya has hecho una aportación económica, te damos las gracias. Si no, hazlo ahora en kpfk.org o llama al 818-985-5735.
Así llegamos al final de esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro más profundo agradecimiento a todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
They told me, you know, we'll give you a day, we'll give you a week, however long it takes for you to accept our help to be healed and to become a child of God and denounce being gay.
Honoring the memory of Dr. Anonymous, coming up on the Rainbow Minute.
got three quarters of the way through several times and was like, well, I have no idea how this would end, so I have to start over. But one thing I know is I can't end a story without hope.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell.
And up next on the stream of free radio, freakradio.org, it's Bathurst Spears Broadsides for June 15th, 2023. This is a Thursday flashback to, the year before we actually had, when we had it, free radio in Santa Cruz. Now we kind of have the simulation of free radio with kind of the occasional netcasts that we do and that I do with continuing desperate regularity every Thursday evening and Sunday morning and early afternoon. So this particular flashback you'll hear about in a moment, it's mostly, well, it's all from the spring of 1994, but I'll be giving you some more details and then I'll just unzip it and let you check it out.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So these three, actually four, selections in this flashback collection, three of them are from March of 1994, and one of them is from April. The March selections begin with a discussion, I guess, en route to Berkeley for a protest with Hoodnah Bombs activist Keith McHenry and me, and I think it segues into some other segments. These were audio recordings I made at the time when I did not have access to the airwaves. That happened a year later when Free Radio Santa Cruz started. When we actually got a transmitter, I think compliments to Stephen Dunifer, put together a station with, 30, 40 broadcasters, compliments of the work of Ed Fry, Kate Wells, and a lot of other folks. In any case, in 94, what was cooking on the pot was a thing called the Tobe decision in Southern California, the city of Santa Ana. The courts had found that its camping ban was unconstitutional, violated the right to travel, right to be free from cruel and unusual punishment, I think, and a couple of other rights as well. And that meant the Santa Cruz sleeping ban, Municipal Code 6.36, which is still on the books, though it just no longer has the word sleeping included now in 2023, that it was unconstitutional, and we began protests trying to get the city attorney to acknowledge this decision, which was not binding, but was certainly a persuasive precedent and might have given him a motivation to pay some attention to it, but lo and behold, he did not. That was, at the time, John Barisoni, who has since retired, but his firm with Condotti, Tony Condotti, taking up the reins is still the chief boohoo in the legal department now. This was also a month or two after I was tried and convicted in San Francisco of violating the injunction against serving free food against Hoodnah Bombs leveled by then mayor, it might have been under Agnos, it might have been under the next mayor, former police chief, and then mayor Frank Jordan. But it was done in a very deceptive manner, using the same kind of claims you now hear in Santa Cruz. Why don't they just go get a permit? And in fact, McHenry and Food Not Bombs tried literally scores of times to get the appropriate permits, and they were always turned back or granted a permit and then later told it was not enough. And you'll hear some discussion of this in the first flashback. Second flashback is a series of news clips by the right-wing station KSCO, which has since kind of gone dark as far as talk radio goes. I think they're still on the air, but they aren't. I think they're mainly something else other than talk radio. They're just not the same anymore. You're going to hear some clips from Daryl Allen Gault, or DAG, as he called himself, a right-wing talk show host denouncing me, homeless people in Santa Cruz, and the so-called progressive city council, which was anything but, because it was the city council's anti-homeless sitting ban, anti-homeless spare changing ban, and other anti-homeless laws that passed in proposals that were originally presented by Bookshop Santa Cruz owner Neil Coonerty, Ryan Coonerty's father, and passed almost unanimously by the city council. I think it was actually in April, March or April. And in response to that, people began to do protests. One number of protesters, Skidmark Bob Turan, Wonton Dave Jacobs, Red Top Robert Flory, as I called them in my publication, The Street Shit Sheet, did a two-week peace vigil on Pacific Avenue, where they stayed day after day, night after night, protesting. And, you know, they weren't breaking windows, they weren't blocking traffic, they just sat there with signs, and they did that day and night. In order to stop this, a whole series of laws was instituted involving being on the sidewalk after dark, involving sitting down anywhere on the sidewalk, involving a whole variety of things, and, of course, panhandling. Peaceful spare changing became a crime. And you'll hear that discussed. And at one point, I held a kind of a tour that went around pointing out the anti-homeless businesses, because I was calling for a boycott of anti-homeless businesses at that time. And somebody threw a rock through the window of the Bookshop Santa Cruz, which, of course, infuriated Neil Coonerty. And you get to hear a lot of discussion about that, and gave right-wing commentators a lot to rage about as well. The third flashback was a KSCO Saturday special, which I guess they no longer have those Saturday specials, or maybe they have. Maybe they're replaying them. I don't know. But that was something that happened every 2 hours on Saturday on this right-wing radio station. I've been on it, or was on it, several times. Then Mayor Scott Kennedy came on the special. He was a kind of, I don't want to say hated, although I think there was a lot of ill will toward Kennedy, or certainly disagreement, both on the right and the left. The city council's, he was a voter in favor of the anti-homeless laws. And he discusses that and other things on KSCO as part of the third flashback. And then finally, the fourth one is I believe it's a KUSP or possibly a KZSC, I'm not sure which, a panel of activists with the Coalition to Decriminalize Poverty, which is another group that formed alongside Huff and Food Not Bombs, although I don't know if Food Not Bombs had I think they did have an active chapter, yes they did, in Santa Cruz. Miley Pickett, Kim Argula, and Renee, who I don't quite remember, but you'll be able to hear him answering questions mostly from activist sympathizers who then came out in massive numbers in May to support Food Not Bombs, which was arrested by police for serving in front of what is now Five Guys and was then a vacant lot which had been a department store before the earthquake of 1989. And I think that this gives you some interesting background. You may not recognize these voices or know these people because you have to have been around 30 years ago to do that. Well, almost 30 years ago. And, well, I'm going to let it roll and see if you get anything out of it, or maybe I won't. But I think it's worth airing. This has never been aired before, and it's good that we can archive it. I apologize to folks who were trying to get this on the archives and couldn't. The archives aren't working now at the moment because the Texas website worker who kind of funnels all our stuff to us for the Huff website, and that's where you get these archives, apparently is under hurricane watch, or there's been some problems with the Internet there. But hopefully it'll be up soon. And again, really, to be clear as I can be, because there's a lot of scattered stuff in here. It's all from March and April of 1994, and I'm hoping to clarify it more when I write up the description of these shows sometime later, hopefully in a day or two, but you never can tell. Again, we're going to have Keith McHenry and myself talking about the struggle to get a permit, and I think also anti-panhandling laws, Daryl Allen Galt, the right-wing commentator, and again, not necessarily in this order. Some of these may be in a different order. News clips after the protests. There were peaceful protests, but then someone went and broke a window as not part of the protest, and that became the focus of all the news media. We get Louis Rittenhouse, who's the most right-wing council candidate, who was also on Daryl Allen Galt's show, as well as kind of essentially beating on the activists Daryl Allen Galt was for this window breaking and denouncing them in no uncertain terms. Scott Kennedy, Ted Jefferson, and Larry, along with talk show host Mike Zwirling, were on his Saturday special. Kind of essentially, Kennedy was the mayor at that time, and some of the show is devoted to the anti-homeless laws and the protests against them, but more kind of with regard to his presidency, his mayorship, precisely. And finally, Miley Pickett, Renee, and Kim Orgula, who's still around, and so is Miley. I think she's taken a more conservative or establishment role as a liberal. I think she's employed by the library, or at least I saw her last working around the library. Sorry, Miley, if I've got it wrong. In any case, I hope you can get something out of this, even though it is a bit fragmented, and it doesn't have the benefit of some kind of cohesive commentary that can help you put it all into a, at least see what my worldview was about it. But, try it on for size anyway. Here it is. Okay, it's March 1st, 1994, about, 6 o'clock, something like that.
Berkeley.
I'm with Katzenjammer Keith McHenry, a notorious food felon and organizer who's bound for the city of Berkeley tonight, where there is a kind of impromptu citizen community hearing to which city council members have been invited on the issue of panhandling laws. The city council began hearing the public on this issue, but didn't like the testimony they got, and so they closed down the hearings, and the community, some community organizers, have begun the hearings again. So, actually, Keith here is, Keith and I, and Catherine Marsh, and Greg Price, and Janice, the ice cream felon, and her driver, a 76-year-old man, have just returned from a hearing at the Rex and Park Commission at McLaren Lodge. Is that right, Keith?
McLaren Lodge.
McLaren Lodge.
Golden Gate Park. McLaren Lodge, Golden Gate Park, 94117.
Now, what? Let's have your view of this rather surrealistic episode. What exactly happened? You had apparently written a letter to the Parks and Rec. And what was in that letter?
Okay. Well, what had happened was that
after the testimony of Joel Robinson in the Robert Kahn case.
That's me. I'm Robert Kahn.
We said, okay, we're going to test his statement, but you can get a permit.
Robinson's statement.
And this is Joel Robinson's statement. So we wrote Joel Robinson, who's the superintendent of Reckon Park, and asked him for a permit to dance, and then we would like to serve free food with our dancing.
Now let's add at this point that the Kahn trial, which ended in a conviction for Kahn, me, for 2 months for violating a court order, hinged upon testimony that A, permits were available to do what Food Not Bombs was doing, Food Not Bombs had not gotten them, and that B, that there were health concerns about what Food Not Bombs was doing, both of which were false allegations. The particular issue regarding parks involved a 1990 action by the same commission we were in front of, actually with different membership, but the same formal body. We actually went to a committee meeting, but it was the same Department of Parks and Rec who excised from the park code that section which made it legal and established a permit process for doing free food giveaways in the public parks of the city of San Francisco. Once that had been removed, there was no way that a health permit could be granted, and Food Not Bombs since that time has operated since 1990 in the summer without any legal permits and in violation, apparently, of a court injunction. And that's what I was convicted of, is was violating the injunction. Now, at the trial, Joel Robinson, the superintendent, testified that Food Not Bombs, when applying for a recreational permit last year, which it did apparently in connection with a dance concert type event at the Civic Center Plaza in the spring, could have applied for a food permit and might possibly have gotten one, disputing the fact, or what it considered to be the what it had been considered to be the truth, that there was no process for getting such a permit. So Robinson stated that there was such a process. Keith has just told you that, you the listeners, that in order to keep up with the latest ever-changing regulations of the Parks and Rec, he applied by letter for a dancing permit, because apparently you cannot get a permit for feeding by itself. You have to do some recreational event. Am I right in that, Keith?
Yes, that's exactly right. That what happened was originally on July 19th, 1990, the Recreation and Parks Commission, at the suggestion of the Recreation and Parks Commission Park and Planning Subcommittee, which is what we just were at, or committee, not subcommittee, committee, had ruled that there should be no permit to serve free food outside in city parks. And then, in applying for permit for the Beta Breakers, the examiner found out that this law existed, and the Beta Breakers had traditionally given away free food at the end of the event as part of their publicity and their advertising of the culinary section of their magazine, and to support their advertisers. So then they had to amend it to be in conjunction with a recreational activity. And so we have...
When did that amendment take place?
That happened in October of the same year or the year later. And I'm not totally familiar with that date. But we had gone to those hearings also, the same committee hearing that we were at here and then the larger one. And our response then, it was just so outrageous what was said at that time that I had asked, well, does recreational drugs constitute recreation? And they all laughed, and we never did get a permit.
So you think this was either 90 or 91 when this happened?
Yeah, 90 or 91.
Okay, so...
And then today, we were back there again, because...
March 1st, 1994.
Right, because on the 15th of February, all the members of Food Not Bombs sent a letter requesting a permit to dance and to serve, and then we'd give free food to our guests on the same date... same schedule that we're doing the free food service now. And so we started dancing for peace, and that's what we do, is we serve free food and dance at Civic Center Plaza. Although right now we're dancing around the police, which is the main thing we're doing. And this was this typically surrealistic event that I've experienced over the last 6 years, of going to these Reckon Park meetings and having Mary Burns explain to the duly elected...
Mary Burns, for those of us who don't know, is...
Mary Burns is the Recreation and Parks Department manager, and she is under Joel Robinson, who's the superintendent. And then she is the one that's so, she really is the person that's personally, most personally invested in Rec and Park, in guaranteeing that no one serves free food in her lovely parks because it'll discourage tourism.
I see.
And that's the...
But how long has she been on the board?
The whole time I've been there, she's the one that received the letter from the police telling them not to allow us to have a permit back in 88. And she's the one that went to all the meetings to negotiate, where we had to negotiate the permit. And she is a very dishonest human being and very frustrating to work with.
What way is she dishonest in your experience?
Well, she will refer, like in the meeting that we just had today, she will deny the many things that she said and change the story slightly and so on. And that's how she just never quite, you can't ever pin her down. And then when it comes time to the tape recorder and pin you down, then she just doesn't participate. So she just, you know, she has some kind of hidden trip that's going on where she thinks the parks are her parks and that she's not going to allow any homeless, bad enough we got homeless people living in them and we can't get rid of them, and now you're going to let people feed homeless people too, you know? So
has she ever publicly denounced that practice?
Yeah, she's made really intensely anti-homeless remarks in public hearings on a number of occasions.
Really? You don't remember when that was?
No, well, all the ones that happened, which were all the time, you know? I mean, they happen twice a month.
Do you know the actual political background behind the removal of the park homeless code in July of 1990? What motivated that? Do you have any inside information?
The
removal of the 1990. Yeah, what led up to that? What was the reason that happened?
Oh, that was just because of the Beta Breakers called and complained that they wanted to get a permit to give away free food and there wasn't any.
No, you misunderstand. The July 19th, 1990. Removal of the entire code.
I understand. Because before we were able to serve, and then in July 19th, 1990, they outlawed it. And that was because of Camp Agnos, the second year of Camp Agnos, and that they were trying to dislodge the homeless from Civic Center Plaza. And so what they did was this elaborate scheme, which involved first sending in a police carnival, police association carnival to Civic Center Plaza. So all the homeless were then living all around all these bumper cars and stuff. And then it's only supposed to be there a week, and after the first week it hadn't gotten rid of the homeless and it hadn't gotten rid of Funat bombs. So they extended it another week. Now, of course, the reason that it's such a bad thing, theoretically, according to the law, as to why we are not allowed to serve free food is because of the impact, you know, quote, end quote, you know, the impact of food not bombs on the park. And, of course, thousands of pounds of Ferris wheels and bumper cars and generators and huge semi-trucks and giant tents and stuff were on the park for 2 weeks, you know, and that wasn't a problem. And thousands of people walking around and no porta-potties for these people and the whole thing was a fiasco and piles of garbage everywhere and all that. That was okay. But feeding homeless people was not. And so that was part of the scam, and then they came in and arrested us in the middle, next behind the bumper cars. And what they did to facilitate that arrest, they had to have this law that took away our permits. So one day, all of a sudden, we didn't have permits. The next day, we were being arrested for doing something we had done for quite some time.
Now, it should be said that Mary Burns, we're crossing the Bay Bridge here for those who are wondering what the sound effects are. Mary Burns was a woman who tried to subpoena to testify to the fact that there was no park permit process. And she, aside from being defectively subpoenaed by my attorney, who had forgotten that a civil subpoena is different than a criminal subpoena, she also refused to come to the court and went to Disneyland instead. We would like to, of course, bring that up at the appeal, but it's unlikely we'll ever be able to do that because my attorney failed to make a motion for a new trial, leading one to wonder who is paying my attorney. But let's not get into that at this time. getting back to your dancing for peace. So what else happened at this meeting today that you think was newsworthy, this Parks and Rec committee meeting?
Well, the agenda item that we spoke under was under the whether or not it was agenda item number 3, and that was the debate on whether to limit the 9 designated pigeon feeding areas down to 8.
Down to 9,
well, it was officially 9, and apparently unofficially there's 15, and I'm thinking they should get rid of this one pigeon area because they got some resistance from some neighbor. So, who didn't appear? No one appeared, yet the 3 commissioners voted to eliminate. 2 people appeared in support of feeding the pigeons, and no one appeared against the feeding the pigeons.
And 3 people appeared in favor of supporting the homeless, which wasn't on the agenda, even though you had, you say, received an agenda in the mail, which led you to believe there would be something happening around the Food Not Bombs issue, right?
Right. They sent me an agenda, and they don't always send me the agenda. So I thought, well, there must be something going on here. And so I thought, well, maybe it's something to do with the pigeons. It's feeding pigeons and feeding homeless, maybe is the same idea from their point of view. You know, I don't
same
know.
Same nuisance value.
Yeah, right. It's the same kind of thing.
Rats
yes.
with wings.
Right. So, anyway, we had written also, because we wrote the letter on the 15th, we thought we better get there and do this because, you know, we don't want to be accused of not turning every stone, and we have 6 years of going to these meetings.
Now, in fact, when I said to you I thought the meeting was a waste of time, you pointed out that it would be important in subsequent legal action. Could you specify how that would be the case?
Well, in both criminal and civil cases, and also on the propaganda level, and in the hopeful and the now apparent investigation by Amnesty International, show that we showed up to each of these public hearings. And we submitted paperwork requesting permits. So the story is, well, all they have to do is apply for a permit. So we applied for a permit. And we, in fact, have done that 98 separate individual times.
For Parks and Rec, for health, or for both?
For a combination of Rec and Park, Health Department, and fire permits.
Now, let's go into the little told story of the fire permits.
Oh, well, The health department's goal was to try to make sure we would not get a health permit. So when we had complied after a year of brutal week in and week out changing of the rules to get the health permit, they finally said, okay, you've done everything you need to do. Now all you need to do is get a fire permit. So we had to go get a fire permit. And so we went and we got a fire permit. And then they tried to get us a public works permit, but for some reason that was politically bad for them, so they backed out of that, and they just stuck with the 3 permits, the health permit, the fire permit, and the rec and park permit.
And you still have the fire permit or not?
We still have a fire permit, and we still have 2 health permits, and the health permits are temporarily suspended pending the reinstitution of the rec and park policy. So the unfortunate thing is that if rec and park gives us the park permit, then the health department is going to feel like they can come around and start hassling us, and then we're going to go through another year of being jerked around with changing the health thing here. You can't do this. You got to get a new, you know, like the typical health department ordinance that we were jerked around on a lot was in the California Code of Environmental Health and Safety states that you got to have all food 6 inches off the ground. Of course, if you go to any produce warehouse or any food warehouse anywhere in the state of California, you can measure the distance of the food off the floor, and it's always 4 inches off the floor because a 2x4 is roughly 4 inches, and food is always stored on pallets that are made up of 2x4s. So the only people that ever had to have exactly 6 inches was us. And nobody else. Everybody else has 4 inches, and we're 6 inches. So, but that was a way of making us, you know, when we brought out the same equipment that your average grocery store, or restaurant, or food warehouse would have, it wasn't good enough. So I went and I measured something like 175 separate pallets, and I got 4 inches on all of them. They eventually conceded that we could have it 4 inches and not six.
Is Hallinan involved in this?
And Hallinan was involved in this. And then there's
Supervisor Hallinan, who testified at my sentencing hearing and gave evidence of the bad faith of the health department.
Yeah, and then the health department will do other issues. So, for instance, like you have to have the food be a certain temperature for a certain amount of time. So
the testimony at the trial.
Right. Well, I can tell you as an expert in food sanitation that you have to have the food at boiling and serve it within a 2 hour period of time. If it is soup with meat in it, right? So if it's chicken soup or if it's from the time of boiling to the time to be definitely sure that there'll be no salmonella poisoning, no bacteria on chicken soup or any of the kinds of soup like that, you absolutely have to throw it out after 2 hours. But you can serve it up to 2 hours from the time of boiling. Now, of course, ours goes from the time of boiling, has gone way before 2 hours. Plus, the other issue is that we serve with vegetarian soup, so your issue surrounding bacteria is like not even an issue. You know, you could really serve it late into the evening, stone cold, and there would be no danger. But but when you're serving hungry people in a huge line, the likelihood of you having your soup gone very fast is very high. And so the whole idea of time versus temperature, they would clock us for 2 hours, and right at 2 hours they'd go and test the soup and freak out on it and everything, you know, and it's like, duh, it's 2 hours, you know. So there's many, many levels of health department hassle. So once we go through this Wreck and Park hassle, then we'll go to health department hassle.
You're predicting the next chapter of the Food Net Bomb struggle.
Yeah, and this chapter has happened like in 88, and then it happened in 89, and then it happened in 90, and then it happened in 91, and then it didn't happen for 92 because it was an election year, and now it's happening again.
Actually, 91 was the election year.
Right, yeah, it was around, well, it was 91 was the time of the election, but there was a brief moment at the beginning of.
For the whole year of 1992, they did not enforce the injunction.
No, and they never busted anybody for anything. And then the injunction, that's all another issue of whether that's legal on any, you know, at any level at all, too. There's a pretty high likelihood that that's completely illegal and completely unrelated to anything, and just another tool to harass us. You know, there's like, surrounding the injunction, there's the fact that the injunction was gained in a corrupt manner numerous times. And then what is one of the classic corruptions was the police went and told the judge all this stuff between recess at the end of a civil contempt case.
Talk about Judge Hanlon in March of 1991.
All right, March 22nd, 1991. And Judge Hanlon found me innocent of serving free food and contempt of the court order.
How do you know the cops talked to him?
That's what he told the reporters. I mean, we have to assume.
What did he tell the reporters?
And that told the reporters that the police had come in and warned them that there's going to be an arrest and it could be very ugly and violent, and at the same time that the police were saying all this, then the city attorney's office also was talking to Judge Hanlon, according to Judge Hanlon, and then it was like, you better have this new injunction. So then Judge Hanlon just said, there's a new injunction. And that's, of course, you can't by law do that. You have to have 72 hours notice and then have a hearing, and then you get a TRO, and then you go and have an actual fight for an injunction. And none of that happened.
Now, the judge claimed, my judge, Judge Barclay, that while the modification was irregular, it is usually the case that, for example, when you have a compliance hearing for a TRO, that at the end of the hearing, the TRO can be reaffirmed.
Yeah, but it was ruled illegal by the judge, and then 15 minutes later, he reaffirmed it.
Now, was the order illegal, or was it just ruled that you could not be convicted of that, violating that order?
Well, it was ruled that I was not in violation of it because the conditions surrounding it had been fundamentally changed, and then, which is that they had outlawed the ability to get a permit. So, for instance, the way the TRO read before that was that you had to get all permits. Well, then what happened was that I couldn't get all permits because they outlawed the permits, and so I wasn't found guilty. But then what they had was no permit to get, and then a TRO at the same time. So, you know, there's a TRO telling you to go get permits, and then you can't get permits because it's a law against getting permits. So, you know, and it's done off the top of the guy's head with no due process. So, this is another scam. And Judge Barkley is basically trying to
get into the Berkeley lane.
Oh, I go a fast way to Berkeley.
Martin Luther King.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's the whole thing's a scam. It's really always a scam. I used to go to these big meetings with community leaders and the Rec and Park staff, and the poor community leaders were just like completely freaked out. You know, that was Marsha Rosen from the Lawyers for Urban Affairs office, and there was Jim Rose from Hattiesburg Neighborhood Council, and there's all these people, and it was like such a crazy thing, Art Agnos's sister's lover was appointed to be head of something. What was she head of? She was some kind of, like, some reason she was the mayor's office liaison, and she was an unbelievable drag, and Mary Burns was at these things, and Joel Robinson, and the city attorney's office, and they're always a fiasco, and you could never, you know, these guys would tell you one thing, you go and do it, and they say, well, that was good, you did that, but there's also this thing over here you have to do, too, and they string you along for months, and months and months, and hope that you burn out and stop doing this. You know, now 6 years later, and we're still there. We didn't burn out, and they didn't stop doing it. And they would look completely mortified that we came back again. And the secretary, Sean Marie Rose.
Talking about the parks, Rex and Park.
Yeah, today she just freaked out completely and went. It's like a nightmare, you know. I got a splitty headache from just being around these people, you know. It's like, you know, because it's like you're talking and you're doing all these things, and it's just a complete fucking waste of time, you know. With the exception that it's like you got to do it so that you can say you went and did it, you know. It's
establishing a legal record.
Yeah.
So now, what about the Kahn trial? What's your view on that, and was it worth your time in the big house? Keith was jailed for 2-3 days from Tuesday afternoon to Friday night during the course of my trial by a man who actually we passed by an hour ago, Judge Benson. Perhaps you could, you know, recall this incident and bring back those merry days of yore.
Well, Judge Benson had put me away for $45,000 bail because I supposedly said asshole to this guy that hit me in the back of the head, for whom name is Nick Rommel, and he was a guy who, he punched me in the back of the head on January 4th.
While you were distributing flyers in the...
I was at a phone in City Hall, and the guy had followed me into the phone booth and started harassing me, and I asked him to leave me alone, and he ran up behind me, hit me in the back of the head. I got felonies and $10,000 bail, and for strong arm robbery and assault and battery, and then I got released, and then I went back to a hearing, and they put my bail up to $45,000, and so I missed the whole trial, the first trial of Food Not Bonds, preserving free food. I didn't get to go to any of it. So I was in jail at San Bruno for this threatening the witness stuff, and then which never happened, and the bailiffs, they never saw it happen. No one saw it happen because it didn't happen. It's like a totally insane thing. So today we saw the Judge Benson walk by, and so I yelled things that weren't directly at him, but he were intended for him, so I'm sure he got the message.
Of course, I too shouted something in that general direction.
Right.
I think I said something like, how many judges does it take to corrupt the system of justice? He didn't like that.
I was going, Judge Benson is my hero. That's what I was telling.
No, you weren't saying that. When
I've said something positive about him. In a,
did you?
Obviously.
Sarcastic voice. All right, well, what's You were telling me you thought the trial was premature, probably a mistake to go forward to the trial. You still have that opinion? Or?
Well, it's added some interest to things, but it, strategically, it, I don't know, in a way it might be, there's kind of two ways about it. One, it's useful for applying pressure against the government more, and that's been positive, and that might end up being really good and helping. And then it was, could be bad because it could be that it emboldens the government slightly. You think, aha, we got a conviction, although you're still out and you're still going to public hearings and you're still doing everything, so it's apparently had little effect on your activity. So that's the thing to keep doing, is to keep doing stuff and not let a conviction stop anybody. And it seems like we've overcome that. We were a little depressed the week that it first happened, but I think that it didn't cause too much dismay. You know, whether 60 days wasn't overemphasized, and it hasn't seemed to discourage anybody from serving, and we're serving every day still. So, and then the other thing, if there hadn't have been a speedy trial, then there would have been kind of possibly a legal limbo where we just kept getting busted every day, and there wouldn't have been any energy towards it. So it might have worked out for the better. You know, it's kind of a toss-up. And then if we hadn't done a speedy trial and it was just going along and we were organizing around the other, you know, we might have had time to organize around other political issues. Although I think, I don't know. I'm finding now and longer from the day of the trial to the present that it is more favorable towards the trial because it gave us this thing to hang on Joel Robinson about the, you can get a permit that we would have never had if we didn't have a trial. And we got, we got a lot of different interesting things out of it. You know, it's a heavy price to pay to get some more paper trail started, but it's gotten, you know, now the paper trail is going around and around and around circles. The government's trying to, you know, I think if anybody, any seriously innocent, you know, unbiased outside observer would just think it was total insanity what was going on, and this just is adding another whole entire level of, you know, because you just don't go full circle over and over again, you know, and it's more and more money spent by the city to do nothing, you know, in a budget crisis, you know. Because you have to, like, look at those poor little, you know, the libraries are going to be shut down, so they can't.
Angela Alioto, by the way, never came through with her letter. Nor did they, nor did, even yesterday when I think it was on Monday, I asked him to, it was yesterday, I asked her chief of staff to do something, and he said, I haven't been able to reach her yet, she's real busy, and I said, well, look, don't freak out, just send me a letter, or just send me word as to whether you're going to do it or not, and he said, okay. I think Angela is not terribly reliable.
No. But you just have to butter her up and include her in all the decisions as far, I mean, butter up her office staff. Right. And she'll get around to it someday.
Right.
Sometimes it's not the speediest time, but
we sent her a fax of a letter that we wanted her to sign, and they have it. So if you ever talk to them again, I'll be out of town as of probably tomorrow. I'm leaving for a week. And you might mention it next time. You say, where's that letter for Khan? You know? So tell me about your participation tonight. What's happening here, where we're going?
Well, we're going to the People's public hearing that was supposed to be a regular public hearing but got canceled due to fear of popular
support
for the rights of homeless, and so now we're going to just do it anyway, so go with them. We're only 30 minutes late, not too bad. Church!
Well, as the beat goes on, it
says, it's okay not to drink.
Hey, It's 4:33 at AM 1080 KSCO. Good afternoon, Monterey Bay. This is Michael Beatty with local and state news. Stores on Santa Cruz's Pacific Avenue had their windows broken around midnight last night. They were the ID building and Bookshop Santa Cruz. The owner of the ID building has been in confrontations in the past with homeless activists, and the owner of the bookshop is a member of the city council, which Tuesday night voted in a series of laws limiting panhandling activities downtown. Homeless activist Robert Norse denies lobbing the rocks, but says he understands the frustrations of street people in Santa Cruz who see a change coming to what Coonerty has described as the city's living room, that is, Pacific Avenue.
It's a situation where the people who are instigating these problems, who are insisting on turning Santa Cruz into a Carmel South, are essentially then hysterically blaming those who simply want to maintain the traditional ambiance and tolerance in the town and make sure that it's not illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night for homeless people somewhere. And I'm not talking about downtown. I'm talking about on the edge of town somewhere where it might be legal for somebody to lay down their sleeping bag or go to sleep in their van.
The new ordinance is outlaw, among other things, sitting or lying on the sidewalks. Coonerty spoke to North this afternoon asking him about the incidents last night, but Coonerty says he received threats of violence from another homeless activist Tuesday night. Coonerty says Kim Argula told him the street people only have, quote, rocks left. Meanwhile, Coonerty has decided to take action against Norse.
He's no longer welcome in the store, and he's nobody follows him. I mean, the homeless are want to keep a long arm's length from him. He doesn't help them. He's got no credibility. My feeling is that he's probably the stupidest political activist in the face of the earth, so I've got no problem with what he does.
Norse is threatening a boycott of downtown stores.
Boycott, which they fear.
Coonerty says he has no concerns about Norse's threat of a boycott and says he's certain last night's incidents at his store and the ID building are related to the new panhandling laws the council, of which he is a member, approved Tuesday night.
Kim Argulo told me that the only thing they had left was bricks. And I know Robert Norse had made a speech between the breaks of during the council meeting in the late afternoon, out my store, and that I had authored the ordinances, and that Stewart across the street had one of the people arrested downtown, that was his building, and pointed that out to people as he walked around downtown.
North says he was simply showing street people the salient points of the history of the homeless struggle in Santa Cruz. The city council's new panhandling laws limit where and how people may ask for money and does not allow sitting or lying on sidewalks in the commercial districts. The council says it acted in response to complaints about aggressive panhandling on Pacific Avenue. Norse says it's an attempt to gentrify downtown at the expense of poor people's free speech rights. Some Santa Cruz area activists are working to increase employee empowerment in their relationships with bosses in the workplace.
First Amendment rights. This will keep an already unsavory social situation in the headlines for months, if not years, and will discourage shopping and investment. A downtown is more than buildings and street fixtures. It means retaining your shopping base, creating a civil environment, and maintaining retail continuity. Planning for a downtown means considering the interrelated ramifications of development decisions and avoiding planning failures like the West Side Longs and now our latest Trojan horse. The mall is now 41st Avenue, and downtown is now an area many feel has become socially repellent. How things change, all we can do is follow supervisor buttons, campaign literature advice, and keep on marching right off the edge of a cliff.
Bookshop Santa Cruz had a rock lobbed through its window last night around 12:30. The owner, Neil Coonerty, is a member of the city council, which Tuesday night voted in a series of laws limiting panhandling activities downtown. Activist Robert Norse has been fighting the imposition of those laws, and he says it's an example of the council doing the bidding of the merchants instead of supporting the free speech rights of the poor.
Can you stand 4 inches from a bike and rack and ask for speech? Can you stand 6 feet from a door? And the fact that vandalism then occurs because of these anti-homeless laws that he himself has been pushing, to fatten the admittedly bulging pockets of merchants downtown. We aren't talking about merchants going out of business, after all. It's hard for me to believe.
Norse has been banned from the bookshop Santa Cruz after an altercation this afternoon between Norse and Coonerty. Coonerty denies he accused Norse of throwing the rock, but Coonerty notes the connection between Tuesday evening's council meeting and last night's rock throwing at his store and the ID building across the street, which also had a window broken.
What the city council was doing Tuesday was actually describing what kind of behavior is acceptable in the community. I think there's some people who haven't gotten that point. And if they think that busting windows of downtown businesses are somehow going to teach them a lesson to drive them out of town, I don't think they're aware of what we've been through since the earthquake and that it's not going to affect us. I think it's really destructive, ridiculous behavior, but I guess it's what you have to put up with in order to cast a vote in the city council.
Norse is threatening a boycott of downtown merchants, but Coonerty says he's not concerned about any warnings issued by Norse.
Had their windows broken around midnight last night. The stores hit were the ID building and the bookshop Santa Cruz. The owner of the ID building has been in confrontations in the past with homeless activists, and the owner of the bookshop is a member of the city council, which Tuesday night voted in a series of laws limiting panhandling activities downtown. Homeless activist Robert Norse denies lobbing the rocks, but says he understands the frustrations of street people in Santa Cruz who see a change coming to what Coonerty has described as the city's living room, that is Pacific Avenue.
It's a situation where the people who are instigating these problems, who are insisting on turning Santa Cruz into a Carmel South, are essentially then hysterically blaming those who simply want to maintain the traditional ambiance and tolerance in the town and make sure that it's not illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night for homeless people somewhere. And I'm not talking about downtown. I'm talking about on the edge of town somewhere where it might be legal for somebody to lay down their sleeping bag or go to sleep in their van.
The new ordinances outlaw, among other things, sitting or lying on the sidewalks. Coonerty spoke to Norse this afternoon asking him about the incidents last night, and Coonerty says he received threats of violence from another homeless activist Tuesday night. Coonerty says Kim Argula told him the street people only have rocks left.
One around last night. They broke the windows of the ID company downstairs. Or down in Santa Cruz. How about Bookshop Santa Cruz? Both stores had their windows broken. Only because we want to clean out the human debris. We want to take care of some of the problems in the family living room, in the community living room. But what happens? They just come in and maraud us. The gunfire goes on. The battle goes on. You know those liberals. They're just so tolerant. They don't get their way. They break windows. They invade private property. They don't buy any grapes. We need to vacuum the living room. We need that tank that Frank Jordan sent over to Golden Gate Park and swept out the homeless, the illegal homeless encampment. All right, glad you could join us tonight. Holy Toledo. Don't forget, in just about a half a minute, we need to take a 10-second break for the Sounds of Silence to comply with FCC rules. We'll do a short promo and then be back with all the sterling conversation tonight. Again, the numbers are 479-1080 in the entire country and county of Santa Cruz, 761-1080 in Gilroy, San Benito, and Monterey counties. And if you're lucky enough to have a cellular on phone, just punch in *1080, and it's a free toll call. By the way, we'll have our Inside the Beltway Washington, D.C. correspondent. You could join us tonight on the Daily Rail. This is your host, Daryl Allen Galt. But you can call me Dag. Just call me. Hey, President Reagan calls me. Check this out.
Hi, fellow Americans. This is former President Ronald Reagan. I always make sure to take an afternoon nap so that I can stay up and listen to my favorite radio talk show host, Daryl Allen Galt, the Common Sense Conservative, on AM 1080 KSCO, the voice of the Monterey Bay. It's on from 6 to 7, you know, which is getting late for me.
But the president is awake tonight. If only he were still president, we wouldn't have a white Watergate. And all the other noise that's going on downtown or in this wonderful country. Okay, here we go. Let's go to Watsonville and talk to Jeff. Jeff, welcome to the Daily Rail.
Oh, I love the Daily Rail. Thank God and Michael Swirling, you're on the air.
Well, thank you very much.
And besides, it's not as late for Reagan as it's getting for us taxpayers.
You got that one.
Anyway, four items in there.
For a family of four in 1999, so it's only going to get worse.
It's going to get a lot worse. Mm-hmm. No, and that's for Bookshop Living Cruise. If Neil Kennedy feels so strongly about letting a homeless have somewhere to sleep, can't he open the doors to his bookshop all night?
Well, I don't think he's, I mean, he feels strongly. I think the city council, especially Mr. Rotkin, takes the position that they provide a number of services, including sleeping facilities to the homeless. And so they don't want or feel or believe that people ought to be sleeping in downtown Santa Cruz or, frankly, anywhere else in public arena.
I agree. The thing is, though, I hear a number of these homeless advocates saying that, and for, you know, for a while, Coonerty and some of the others have been on their side. It's nice to see them finally starting to come back to reality.
Well, I think it was more Kennedy and Rotkin. I don't know that Mr. Coonerty's always been a real homeless advocate.
I take it back on what I've said on him. But, you know,
he's a compassionate man, but he also understands people like Robert Norris and some of the other activists are just that. They're doing their Andy Warhol 15 minutes of fame, and they just keep beating it to death.
That's right. And I want to applaud Mr. Coonerty for what he said in the news when you released today. When I was driving down listening to KSCR, I said, oh, thank heavens, he said what he said. It's about time, you know, the shop owners in Santa Cruz said, go ahead and boycott us, because the people who are going to be buying there are going to buy there anyway.
Let's give him a community applause here.
That's
for listening,
right.
And we're glad you talked to Jim. Hi, Jim. Welcome to the Daily Rail.
Yeah, good evening, Dave. Listen, on this whole deal about downtown, I think that there's some things that we're forgetting. You know, when you're dealing with these folks, you've got to keep your eye on the big picture.
Okay.
And not get bogged down. I was just reviewing my tapes of the city council meeting of second Tuesday in November when Mr. Scott Kennedy assumed the office of mayor. And one of the statements that he made in reviewing the Progressive's year last year was that a statement he made that by the end of December, a police review board would be in place. I presumed he was talking about 1993. That was the plans at that time. However, you haven't heard much talk recently.
Well, I think it's on the agenda next.
Well, it sure is. That's why I'm calling you about it. It is on the agenda, and it hasn't gone away. And if you would have listened to Mrs. Byers the other night make the statement that she was going to vote for this package of Get Tough on the Bums somewhat reluctantly. She felt that they had gone way too far. And
she's the one that wanted to give them blue blazers and make them docents downtown.
Yes. So it's what you have in mind.
The village idiot, Catherine Byers, and unfortunately she's going to be mayor next year.
Yes. Can you imagine if you...
So we'll remain in the headlines nationwide in Santa Cruz, yes, thanks to Catherine Byers and some of the other goofballs.
The ridiculousness that we've seen so far is just stick around. main event's coming up. But anyway,
I respect Kennedy and Coonerty and those folks that had at least had the guts to throw people out of the meetings who were disruptive. Now, Catherine Byers, I'm sure, is going to be stormed by the troopers every Tuesday.
That would never happen. She would never...
She'll probably invite them to her home.
It is what I call my main thing is that I believe is, you know, they've thrown the bone now to try and quell the merchants downtown. They had to do something. They're on their back. Those people downtown trying to make a living, you know, and it's to the extent that if these things work, I'm all for it. Anything that can be done now, down there to help those working people. Myself, I think it's just a stall tactic. I don't know that. You've got an example with these broken windows of what do you think is going to happen when they tie the police department's hands now with that police review. What good are these ordinances going to do? You're going to see a cop downtown Santa Cruz scared to death. These kooks will be down there, you know. I mean, the ACLU the other night said as much as so that they, you know, this thing will be tested. And they'll, in a couple of weeks, put in this police review, and these ordinances will be as good as, you know, nothing.
Well, I hope not. I'm certainly going to keep the pressure on. Your one-man city council review board will be right on top of it, and if there's some type of funny games going on, the responsible citizens and of this community, including yours truly, will certainly profile it. And if they have to admit that their behavioral ordinances were done for show, I think that's going to be...
I appreciate what you do, Dag. I hope Mr. Coonerty takes a good look at that broken window before he votes for police review. Thanks a lot.
Okay, Jim. Thanks very much for listening to AM 1080 KSCO. We're glad you called. Folks, let's give a little applause to Mr. Coonerty. He decided not to let Mr. Norris back in his store anymore, which I think is an excellent decision. Just keep the bum out. He's a phony homeless activist. And we need to vacuum our living room downtown. And when that happens, I think we need to... just plain old give the city council a bit of applause when appropriate. Again, the numbers are 479 Hamilton. Hi, Mr. Hamilton. Welcome to the Daily Rail.
Yes, hello.
How you doing?
I'd like to clarify something. I'd like to clarify that I left Saturday from Food Not Bombs at 2 o'clock to Oakland to see my uncle. And I also like to say that...
Why are you telling me this?
Well, because I'm the one that had the table in front of the ex-mayor and city council member, Dale Coonerty's bookshop.
Yes.
And I'd like to say that I got back 3 hours ago from my uncle's. I had no idea about this breaking of windows. I do not condone that.
So you're pleading not guilty on the air of anything having to do with the vandalism in downtown Santa Cruz last night.
Right.
Okay.
And I also like to say that...
why don't you call Margaret Marr or Ben Puffed Rice, great defense attorneys.
I'm doing this, sir.
Okay. Great local defense attorneys.
I'm a homeless activist, and I like Robert Norris, and I belong to Homeless United.
Why don't you and Mr. Norris and the rest of you folks are going to boycott downtown Santa Cruz? Why don't you just leave town and boycott Santa Cruz altogether?
I'm in the mix, because I'm the one that gathered 35 signatures from people in Santa Cruz County to stop the sleeping ban. And I don't want to be the one that is being perpetrated for breaking windows, because I was not there, and I have proof that I was not there.
Well, certainly I didn't accuse you. I don't know if anyone's accused you, but if...
When people get Robert Norris, people start talking...
I didn't accuse Mr. Norris.
Robert Norris and blah, blah, and this and that, and start talking dirt about the man that don't even know him when I was in Berkeley, and people...
I didn't accuse him of doing that.
As a person, you know, I respect you as a person.
Thank you.
You know, all right? You know, but respect, you know, other people, and people have a different, but we do not. I believe Robert did not have anything to do with what happened at ID, our bookshop, Santa Cruz, and I do not condone that.
All right, so you are pleading not guilty.
I know Neil Coonerty, personally.
You're pleading not guilty for yourself and Mr. Norris.
No, us, and I'm tired, because I've been there 3 years, and I believe in what's going on here in Santa Cruz with the downtown, trying to help out and everything, but, you know, I do not condone what's happened.
Well, we're delighted to hear that, Mr. Hamilton. Thanks very much for calling. We're glad you're listening to AM 1080 and campaigns for Rusty. Let's go to Santa Cruz and talk to Robert about homelessness. Hi, Robert. Welcome to the Daily Rail.
Hey there, Drag. Is this my common nonsense conservative?
Common sense conservative.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. Slip of the tongue there.
It's all right.
Well, actually, it was nice to meet you in the station the other day. I'm wondering...
Oh, is this Robert Norris?
The same.
Ah, the man who's doing so much to...
alienate Neil Coonerty. Actually, I tried to patronize his
Occupy downtown with a lot of nonsense.
Oh, well, I thought you were the master of the nonsense.
Nope. I'm the master of common sense.
Common sense.
Even Michael Rutkin mentioned that in the newspaper today.
Michael,
we need some common sense downtown. We don't need Robert Norris. But what do you have to say, Robert?
We had one of your
compatriots call and deny any involvement in breaking glass and trashing downtown. How about you?
Well, we do know who's involved in urging folks to pass a law that will tie up jail space and public money to arrest people for, get this, asking for a cigarette after dark.
Is that me?
That's kind of silly.
Is that me you're speaking of?
Certainly not. Oh. I would never accuse you. You're not on the city council, are you?
No, but I've been, I'm on the city council in a means. I'm the one-man city council review board.
Well, I'm glad. We need a couple of review boards.
Well, in this case, I agree with them, Neil. I mean, I'm sorry.
Well,
I agree with them, Robert.
Neil, for God's sake.
No, I had Neil on a week ago Monday, and, you know, I'm delighted to have the man on when he's taking these kind of steps to clean up downtown. After it all, it is our living room, and we ought to vacuum it once in a while.
Well, I think that, you know, there's a difference between a living room and a public street, you know. I mean, I may not invite you into my living room. Actually, I would, you know, but I like a broad swath of people in my living room. But
well,
when you're dealing with a community, you got many, many different kinds of people, and as you know, I don't know how these words, you know, react to them, but they all have rights. And
I'm tired of people abusing their rights, and if I hear rights anymore in these conversations, I want to add responsibilities to it. Every time I hear somebody say rights, I want to say, how about some responsibilities, Mr. Norris?
You do. We have responsibilities.
Yes. Why don't you demonstrate them, exercise them, show us that you mean it.
Thousands of
thousands of dollars arresting people. You have to walk around the mall with a tape measure deciding where you can stand. I mean,
and by the way, when are you going to jail?
When am I going to jail?
Yes.
Are we talking about what?
You're going to jail in San Francisco for violating a court order, I recall, isn't
this
it?
This is true. In San Francisco, I'll give you a briefing on that.
I don't want to waste time on that. I just wanted to know when you're going to jail.
Well, not just slow down, Dad. You know, I mean, let's not rush things here.
You love Limbaugh, too, huh?
Well, I call him Gush Dumbo, actually.
Well, just because you can't understand common sense.
Well, I try. I try hard.
Mm-hmm.
As you pointed out, I've been convicted of a similar kind of policy where they're trying to drive homeless
people. I've got one other homeless activist on the line here, so wrap it up here, Robert.
I'll wrap it up.
You should have called me earlier because I would have loved to sparred for...
Well, let me urge people who want to oppose this law to call 475-6824. And also,
there's probably four or five out there.
All right.
But there aren't 800 numbers. They'd have to come up with 20 cents,
That's true.
They don't spend the money on that. You know it.
That's true. Thanks,
right.
Dag.
Right. Thanks, Robert. Let's go to Tom in Santa Cruz, also on homelessness. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the Daily Rail.
Hi. How's it going, Dave?
Fine.
Listen, I want to know what the difference is between a bum and somebody that's homeless. In Santa Cruz, we seem to have kind of a blurred perspective on somebody that doesn't work.
You said bomb or bum?
B-U-M.
Bum, yeah, that's what we used to call them.
You know, in Colorado, they're called bums.
Yeah, they still call bums in certain... But that's not the sensitive term now for these punks, drunks, and skunks.
There are people that are homeless.
No question about it, but most of them are taken care of.
For a job and trying to get their act together instead of out campaigning against their right to be homeless. I think that's insane.
Right.
You know, if you have the time and effort to go down and bat hassle the county.
Get a job.
Yeah, why don't you use that energy to get a job and go get some food stamps? Go,
there's three or four pages of ads in the want ad section every day, and just the Sentinel alone, you can get the Chronicle, the Mercury, you get a lot of papers, and maybe find a job.
Well, I think this has been long overdue. I mean, I've been a resident of Santa Cruz since I was a little kid, and you know, I've been homeless too. I mean, it's no big thing. You just got to get back out there and get a life instead of just try to have that as a lifestyle. You know, these people should maybe go to a third world nation and see what homeless really is.
No question about it.
Okay.
All right, Robert, thanks very much. Thomas, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Confusing the names tonight on AM 1080 KSCO, your news talk leader. All right, down to the final couple of minutes. Let me read you a quick segment of the problems up in Berkeley, which are very similar. They're about to pass the same type of ordinances in Berkeley. And I found this quote just hysterical from the, as president of the Downtown Berkeley Residential Neighborhood Association, Linda Powell. She says, I'm basically a liberal at heart, but I work here and I live here and I want to walk and talk the streets and have rights too. She goes on to say, we want some protection against the large and small acts of violence, which basically form a gauntlet down Shattuck Avenue and Telegraph Avenue, she said. When a woman comes to me and says, I gave because I was afraid, that's a toll to come to my house and park on a public street. It's stealing, and I agree with this lady. But listen to this whine. You get tremendous abuse now on the streets. If you don't give money, you're a B word, sounds like itch, or a prostitute, she said. If you were active in the civil rights movement or in women's rights, it just tears your insides when you're out getting a latte a latte at night and you just want to get home in a good mood. So this is a payback to the liberals who wanted to just suspend all behavior and responsibility in the 60s, the 70s, and the 80s. All this behavior is now coming back to haunt them. In some cases, they're leaders of communities. Well, hi, Vernon.
How are you doing, Dag?
Good,
hey,
sir.
Louie.
Good evening.
I go by River Street all the time around 5 o'clock, so I kind of got a sense of the cross-section of the homeless down there.
Yeah.
So I came up with some legislation you need to instigate.
Yeah.
It's called Three Strikes and You're Grafted. And the third time they get busted. In fact, if we did that nationally, we could solve part of our military problems. They could always, you know, peel potatoes and do KP.
You know, Vern, that was a few months ago I was out here, and it's almost deja vu. You should bring it up. I'm really a firm believer that a lot of our serious problems, not only in Santa Cruz, but all the inner cities, and it can really be directly related to elimination of the draft. And I'm really of the opinion that we should, where President Clinton has suggested the community service component,
uh-huh.
That we should bring back community service in the the draft, and basically people have an option. You know, one or the other, but when you get out of high school, you either get into college or you put in your 2 years in the service or in community service, and when you get out of college, you got a choice of a couple years to one of those two and that mandatory duties. And I really think that that's a lot of the problem in our inner cities and a lot of problem in the city of Santa Cruz, that kids are 17 and 18 and there's just no direction out there. So I think you're on the money. We agree.
We need people like Dag, who are attorneys, to get around the ACLU, who have stopped cities and municipalities from putting people to work for what they
can. I'll do that in my spare time, Vernon.
But, you know, the ACLU have stopped that. People have tried to require people on the dole to contribute to the community, and the ACLU has stopped that, haven't they, Dag?
Well, they try to interfere with nearly everything. I'm not certain about that point.
I think the ACLU is only going to be satisfied with chaos.
That's it, anarchy.
That's anarchy or chaos, one of the two.
Vernon,
anyway,
quick.
Three strikes and you're drafted.
Way to go, Vernon. Amen. All right, folks. Vernon, thanks for calling, and we're certainly glad you're listening to AM 1080 KSCO. Folks, we're going to take a short break in the action here. A little recess of the courtroom.
Your favorite radio station has been characterized as too conservative, too right-wing, too one-sided, too biased. Oh, we are we? Funny thing is, those who hold those beliefs never listen to KSCO, so they don't hear John Muth, Eric Schecht, Ted Jefferson, or Paul Brindell. Oh, it's true that KSCO talk hosts and callers frequently express frustration and outrage at the political antics of those who run our local government, but we consistently encourage dialogue and expression of all points of view, even from the mayor of Santa Cruz, Scott Kennedy, the confirmed guest on the next KSCO special this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, right here on Bury the Hatchet Radio, AM 1080 KSCO.
And we had a situation where I don't remember the exact details, but 10 years ago, when the progressives first had a majority on the council, they tried to propose what was, at the time, one of the most sweeping or most stringent rent control ordinances, what would have been one of the most stringent rent control ordinances in the state. And a petition campaign, a referendum, basically was marshaled, which forced the council to retract their action. So this was an example where the council didn't tuck itself comfortably under the wing of other cities that had already established rent control, but tried to far outpace in a single jump to move to the head of the pack. I'm saying that because we've had a similar argument about civilian review of police, where I've been criticized for being too timid in our approach to that. We're not trying to create the state-of-the-art police review commission. We're trying to get something in place because there's a lot of case law, a lot of other cities' experiences. But because of that, I think basically, if you went person by person, I think probably the majority of the Santa Cruz City Council would favor some sort of rent control. But the progressives in Santa Cruz, I think, are politically gun-shy because it's been...
Are you willing to take the initiative as a mayor now, a political leader of the city?
Probably not, for a couple of reasons. You know,
yeah.
It's a partly political judgment, but people, most effective politicians don't go out of their way to embarrass their other council members. And unless you're... Well, I'm not talking about violations of the Brown Act, but unless in your judgment you really think there's a chance to take a certain action, unless you're grandstanding, it doesn't really pay to
wonder if you people ever thought of the economic benefits that you might derive by rent control.
Sure.
I don't mean confiscating the landlord's right to make a profit now.
Yeah.
I'm talking about reasonable rent. And
we did, I will say, it's small potatoes, but I did initiate an offer, and we did succeed in passing and extending mobile home rent control to Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
In our tenure, but that's the only...
We have them in Watsonville for
yeah.
some strange reason, but they will not look at the
yeah.
overall picture.
I think it's fair to say that rent control does have a mixed experience in California.
It's a very dirty issue to a lot of people, and I've met a lot of opposition to it, too, you know, from people who rent, too, by the way.
Yep.
And I was going to say that, Scott, you would simply release a lot of purchasing power in the tenants who would go downtown and support your local merchants. I think you'd find a greater economic progress there.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
Watsonville, John, appreciate your call, as always. Now, Ted Jefferson, you've been shaking your head continuously.
Well, about rent control, not only is it a bad political issue, but it goes right to the very heart of a capitalistic government. And I'd rather ask the mayor about some of the bees that are buzzing around in the bond. And as you know, I do a radio talk show here every Saturday night from 8 to 10, and a lot of my callers are concerned about the quality of life in downtown Santa Cruz. And that might sound like a mixed message there, but we've had callers that talk about public urination, the panhandling law, the homeless issue, and I understand now that there's a group of people that are going to challenge the right to assembly law regulation that was recently passed. They say when it goes into effect on the 23rd, they're going to have a demonstration. Why are we having so much controversy about something to me? And again, I need to make my point clear on this. I've told people that they call in that if I owned a business in downtown Santa Cruz and people were standing out in front of my business that I didn't want there, I'd water my lawn. Yeah. What's the issue? What's the real deal here?
There's been a lot of discussions on all of these points, and even in the downtown recovery plan, there are a lot of discussions. I remember I felt that one of my first major contributions politically was the argument about, believe it or not, benches in downtown Santa Cruz. There's very strong sentiment among some in the business community that there should be no benches in downtown Santa Cruz in the new mall because it was an attractive social nuisance. We fought for and succeeded in getting 54 benches placed in downtown Santa Cruz. My view is an elderly person, a shopper who's just plain exhausted from leaving us money, parent with children, people have to be able to sit down. So we fought through a fair amount of political flack to have a downtown that's pedestrian friendly, the benches and so on. Okay, people say, why isn't Santa Cruz like Carmel or Pacific Grove? Well, for a lot of reasons. No question, as a city of license, there is more permissibility in Santa Cruz. I mean, there's not just among the progressives. If you talk to your rank and file conservative in Santa Cruz, they're more liberal in their social attitudes towards diversity and so on than in other surrounding communities. The thing that most people don't realize is that Santa Cruz City is the county seat of Santa Cruz County. The comparison would be more with Salinas in Santa Cruz than Monterey and Pacific Grove in Santa Cruz. We have the county jail facility a block and a half from Pacific Avenue. Every public inebriant who is busted and jailed, typically 4 hours later, is released a block and a half from the city of Santa Cruz, main commercial street. That's not true of any other city in the city of Santa Cruz. It's not true of a lot of cities in other counties. So we definitely have major, what, you know, for shorthand we call social problems. Now, what have we done about it? We have taken a whole series of aggressive actions way before those so-called panhandling ordinances. Let me just run through a few of them to give you an idea of the scope. We're funding what's called the Homeless Day Resource Center, a Community Day Resource Center. This is a place where people can shower, use laundry facilities, leave their belongings in secure lockers, get phone messages, and have access to everything from drug and alcohol abuse counseling to job training and psychological.
And don't they still curse you for not providing enough?
Actually, I think this is an important distinction, not probably more important to me than other people, but no, they don't. They are very grateful for the fact that if they're, for example, camping
in factions of the homeless, maybe.
No, when you're on the city council, you realize that the half dozen most outspoken people, Robert Norris, David Wonton Jacobs, Food Not Moms, they also have very little credibility in the so-called homeless community because they are constantly, when they're not attacking us, which is fair game because we're elected officials, they're attacking the service providers who are trying to do real things for homeless people. That's a whole other discussion. But what I want to say is we've tried to give people an alternative to hanging on the street in Pacific Avenue. We work closely with the Downtown Association for what's called Santa Cruz Cares. This is a voucher system that's worked very well in other cities where if somebody asks you for a quarter or a buck, you give them a voucher that's good for food or clothing, but can't be used for alcohol or other substances like that. We have funded, with the help of county mental health, and a lot of people made fun of this too, but I think it's very important, county mental health caseworker
whose whole beat, if you were, is the downtown Pacific Avenue. All they do is try to make contact with people who have serious psychological or mental problems, emotional problems, and to make sure that they're on their medication, that they're in their therapy groups, that they're getting the kind of help they need. We funded and helped to start what's called the Santa Cruz Hospitality Program. That was ridiculed also. It's a program where there will be several people on the street. They aren't police. They aren't law enforcement people. They're people who will help tourists understand where there's parking, where there's restrooms. If there's a problem, if a group of kids are hanging on in front of somebody's business, they'll be able, with a softer touch than the police, to come and say, you know, please move along. You've been here for 2 hours. Let's move on. We've also reconfigured, the police department has reconfigured their staff assignments so there will be increased police presence. I think the point I'm trying to make is we've tried to approach this comprehensively. There's a tendency in public debate to focus on a single point as though that's going to solve or not solve it. Believe me, none of us are so deluded to think that these new, stricter downtown ordinances are going to make the difference. There will still be people on the street. We haven't tried to outlaw people from the streets. What we've tried to do is address certain behaviors that are absolutely unacceptable in a public space, and that's what we're trying to address. And I know it's not as strict as some. I mean, I get phone calls from a lot of people saying, just get those people off the streets and out of here. And I say, hey, this is the United States of America. Because you're poor, because you're disheveled, doesn't mean you can't sit. Now, we will say you can't sit in front of somebody's business, you can't sit in front of a ready teller machine, you can't sit on the curb. But if somebody wants to sit on a bench, frankly, I hold to the notion that they have the right to do that. And having fought for the benches to be there to begin with, I still am taking that position.
Concerned citizen has something to say.
Scott, I completely am with you as far as the rights of individuals to be able to have personal liberty, but I would cite to you that not a single one of my women friends feel comfortable going to downtown Santa Cruz by themselves, and I would ask you, what about their rights?
Yeah.
I would say that particularly, and this is a very sore topic for many people in Santa Cruz County, particularly that the people in most cases who are coming up and accosting them are supported not only by a direct result of the handouts, but also by programs funded by these same tax-paying citizens, are offended by their inability to go into the metropolitan center of their own community without being harassed and confronted. And that is fundamentally an abrogation of their rights.
What would you suggest, Larry? What would you suggest? I mean, I'm seeing both sides of this issue, and believe me, when my callers call, and I get a lot of callers, there's certain behaviors that are just not acceptable, and I'm sure that we address that whenever we can. But what I'm hearing is that it's almost like a class distinction.
No, I don't even think it's that. I think that a society has an obligation to provide basic services for its citizenry.
Okay.
Amongst those are protection, and there are also certainly medical care and things like that. But I also feel that when you're in a society that, particularly in Santa Cruz, when you're confronted with people who are obviously able-bodied, who have what appears to be a ready mind and complete faculties, yet are making the choice not to work, and instead of not working, are sustaining themselves by harassing community members who do make the decision to work and take funds from them by direct result of harassment. And I have to be succinct in this statement. People give money because they want to be left alone. That's wrong.
Okay, and I think again, you know, the government can do so much. And I think the people have to do so much. In other words, not a lot, but I often get asked, do I have any spare change? And I just take the time to deliver this lecture. Yes, I do have spare change. I worked like heck to get it, and I'll be darned if I'm giving it to you. Get out of my face and get to stepping. You know, I know everybody doesn't have that same kind of force, but again, that guy has a right to beg. I don't believe in giving to beggars.
Believe it or not, you know, in the debate publicly, there were a lot of people stood up and said, there's absolutely no problem downtown Santa Cruz. And it was left to the city council members to say, wait a minute. It may not be a problem for you, but it is a problem. And I pointed out, not to get racial or gender specific about it, but basically we had a whole string of white males between the ages of 18 and 30 who came and spoke in the public hearings to say, it's no problem. Why are you guys overreacting? I say, when my 11-year-old daughter is afraid to walk down the street. Or when I go visit a private school on Pacific Avenue and they say that for them to walk to the Taco Bell or Loud Nelson Center, they have to run a gauntlet of people who aren't panhandling but are extorting funds from young people. Or when a 72-year-old woman gets out of her car, goes to step up on the curb, and there's 12 young, I suppose, teenagers planted there, and they won't extend the common courtesy of stepping aside so that she can step up on the curb without worrying about falling over or breaking her hip or something like that, something's wrong. We are not saying that there's nothing wrong. We're trying to address the problems with a whole variety of responses. Now, on your specific question, I don't think it's exactly fair or accurate. At least I'm not persuaded that there's this great overlap between the problematic people downtown and the social service programs, nonprofits that are serving the homeless. For example, many of the people who are the most problematic downtown are acute alcoholics. And if you're under the influence and possession of alcohol, you're prohibited from participating in all the meal programs and overnight shelter and stuff like that. But the point is, we have a society that creates alcoholics or helps create alcoholics a lot faster than we provide therapy for them or any kind of alternative to them. We don't have the resources to address the whole problem, but we're trying to address it on a whole variety of fronts. And I would say, you know, I don't want to oversell it, but I would say that for people who've been skeptical or turned off or had a bad experience, I'd say give us one or two more months and give Santa Cruz a shot this summer. The key thing, as far as I'm concerned, for the revitalization of downtown is to get more people down there. You can't eradicate the so-called problem. You have to dilute it. We're working aggressively on the economic development front. When you get the theater complexes down there, you get Ross clothing stores, you're going to see a revival downtown where I think you do in a more humane way, which is just to have more people on the street. And I just ask, you know, give us a chance a couple months from now, give another shot and see if the situation isn't dramatically improved.
And Scott, I would speak to that. I would say that the citizenry of the county certainly at large would have to take some responsibility for this also, and we need to come together and come down and take back our street.
Yeah.
In this case, one problem Pacific Garden is the center of our community at large.
And we talked about this with merchants after the the New Year's Eve riot. We had Neil Coonerty and I had a meeting with 50 or 60 really outraged retailers and business people from downtown. We couldn't, we didn't deny or try to excuse. I mean, they had good reason to be mad, but amongst themselves, they said, we have got to be proactive. We've got to go out in front of our store. If we're concerning, we have to be willing to testify to the police. We have to be willing to go to court. It takes a kind of a community-wide, and we want to stop it far short of vigilantism and far short of stigmatizing the homeless. And that's where we still get in trouble because we're not willing to exercise the kind of rhetoric that a lot of people want to hear at the expense of poor people.
Monterey Bay, you are listening to the KSCO Saturday Special with Michael Z, Mayor Scott Kennedy from the city of Santa Cruz, a concerned citizen named Larry, and KSCO's talk show host Ted Jefferson, the weekend rapper whose program can be heard on this.
There's just not enough time, but I've made 2 pages of notes while I was on hold before I get to my main topic. On this next demonstration downtown, which is scheduled to coincide with the sidewalk sale, I'd suggest to you, Scott, that there's going to be a real public safety issue with a bunch of people with tables full of goods and shoppers milling around and then these bums trying to make their point. Of course, they didn't bother to get a permit and were refused a permit. So I hope that between you and the police, you can get something going to protect the merchants and their customers during this tumult. Also, for your information regarding the Brown Act, you made some remarks in the first hour to indicate that you and your folks on the city council have been doing all sorts of public disclosure even before the Brown Act. The Brown Act has been in effect for over 40 years, so...
I just meant it was amended on April 1st.
That's right, but...
Requiring things that we've been doing already.
Well, most of the things that were required for 40 years, but unfortunately it was so vague that no one could ever be successfully prosecuted under it, so we'll hope for some change on that. Also, regarding the situation downtown, I would hope you would take a proactive stance on trying to get the booking center relocated to the Mid-County Jail so that the drunks, punks, and skunks are not just released downtown. And, you know, in terms of River Street...
Yeah, we're trying to negotiate that with Scotts Valley, but they're not really...
Hey, Al, why don't you tell us how you really feel?
Well, there's a mid-county jail that's already sitting there, not been given enough funds to open for lack of staff funding. So if they opened that up, they could all be carted down there and put in for 4 to 6 hours to detox and then released and let them walk back to town, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, the old philosophy, if you don't want the stray cats, no invidious comparison meant between humans and cats, but if you don't want the stray cats hanging around, don't feed them. And we certainly provide a lot of shelter and food services in here that attract people to come and use our town as their own vacation resort at our expense, and then they trash it. They sleep in our parks. They crap in our woods. I'd like to know if there's any figures available on just how many job placements or successful counseling has been done at the homeless day shelter. I would guarantee you that's just a figurehead to make yourselves look good. Now, also, you made a remark the other night on the show when you were on, and you were discussing the INS and Mr. Chavez, and you made the remark that I thought was totally stupid. You said the big problem arose because INS didn't arrest him when he was released from prison. Well, they made up for their mistake by arresting him after one of your friends had hired him illegally. So your stance is totally without any merit as far as I'm concerned. You mentioned rent control. Rent control has a tendency to destroy the local rental stock because landlords lose the incentive to keep them maintained. And it's just sort of coincidental in my mind that the three times rent control was attempted here in Santa Cruz, it was put forward by none other than Arnie Fishman, who now heads up the Community Housing Corporation, which I guess is a job that you and he and some of his other friends created for him after he couldn't succeed in the political venue. And I'd like you, when I get done with you here, Scott, to discuss...
you were going to say step out in the parking lot.
You'll have to invite me on your show again.
I'll have you on real soon. We have a lot to talk about. The Never Really Good Housing Project, anyone I know didn't...
Kane, I said this to you before, Beth, and it's not convincing, and I can understand why not. The first action I took as a member of the Public Safety Subcommittee of the Santa Cruz City Council was to review the crime statistics in Santa Cruz and say, where is the crime and where is the deployment of our law enforcement? And what we discovered was that the highest incidence or percentage of crime was the beach flats, and that was not the location where the highest deployment of police officers. And we said, we want to deploy the police where the crime is. I'm speaking as a progressive liberal, okay? Secondly, we said in order to try and get the upper hand on some of the street dealing and so on, what's the next step that you need? The police chief said, we don't need one or two new officers. We need a quantum leap up to what they called then a director of patrol unit or neighborhood action team. And the Santa Cruz City Council funded in the tune of $300,000 to $350,000 a year, a new director of patrol unit. I don't know when the last increase in the staffing is, but... in the Santa Cruz City Council, but we actually increased the size of the first action of the council when I was on was to increase the size of the police force. So what we have is a situation where the problems are created, generated, multiplied so quickly, I wouldn't claim that we have the upper hand on it. I think the characterization of the beach flats is worse than it was in the last 14 years. It's partly kind of partisan, frankly. People trying to make an argument because I talked to other people who see really significant increase.
There, Claire Lindman, a lovely lady who lived all of her life in the beach flats, and the last 3 years of her life have been hell. She died, one of our oldest citizens in Santa Cruz. At her funeral and her service, many, many of the people were there. And I personally don't drive in the flats, Scott. It's too dangerous for me. Every once in a while, if I have my brothers or someone certainly hefty enough that they don't approach our car, I go in. Most of the time, my friends have to come out. And I want to tell you something, Scott. There is not one single person down there who will call the police because they don't want the retaliation.
I think that fact is belied by the number of service calls we get from beach flats.
The number of service calls are only when they're desperate. No one wants an officer walking to their door.
Scott Bear,
who's going to be calling you momentarily, says that
there has not
been an officer down there in months. And in my darling little burned-out home at 206 Park Place, the home that I love that was burned to the ground, they are dealing drugs out of there, Scott. There is no way that has stopped it. And as for the DPU, Scott, it was so long since I saw an officer down there, I wouldn't have recognized him, and that was long before I burned out.
I was saying yesterday that the standard of evidence in the county of Santa Cruz, if we want to prosecute a drug bust, we have to have three confirmed buys. Our police force has to be able to testify in court of three distinct transactions, or the DA won't even take it to trial. I'm not criticizing the DA. He doesn't have the staffing either. The point is, uniformed police don't make confirmed drug buys. This notion that the only policing is the officer on the street in uniform, I think belies the best advice we get from our law enforcement.
It's 11 minutes before noon. 11 minutes remain in this edition of the KSCO Saturday Special. My name is Michael Z. With me in the studio are Santa Cruz Mayor Scott Kennedy, a concerned citizen named Larry, and Santa Cruz KSCO talk host Ted Jefferson. If you're not on hold, folks, already waiting to be on the air, please don't call. There's only 10 minutes remaining, and we will get to everybody who is on the telephone right now. Our next caller will be Robert Norris, line 3. Robert, you're on the air.
Hi, everybody. How you doing, Ted? I think.
Hello there. How are you?
Good to hear you again. We had that long talk the other night about these crazy conduct ordinances, and I'm glad you brought up some of the points.
Well, now you have the mayor here. You can tell him exactly what's on your mind.
Unfortunately,
it wouldn't be a day in politics without both Robert Norris and Beth Johns.
Well, I'm afraid that, you know, Scott, you already know what's on my mind. You've heard it many times. It's the public, I think, that really needs to be informed on the issue.
Robert, have you heard Scott's explanation about what he's doing and what they're attempting to do?
Well, the real problem is...
Did you hear him this morning?
Yes, I did.
And what did you think about that?
Well, my thought is we have, you know, a case of public bamboozling again here. Instead of real solutions, you have a case of bogus scapegoating. And if you look...
Let's be clear here that Robert Norris, who's now going to pontificate about the downtown ordinances, opposed the Homeless Day Resource Center, opposed the downtown host program, atones the police. Just be clear, if you're talking about the whole picture, Robert, let's be clear about the fact that you have opposed vocally and adamantly every single initiative the city council has taken to try to address the problems downtown.
He does not want to discuss these ordinances in a true public process. That's one of the things I'm concerned about raising. The police review has been essentially talked to death for 3 years, but these ordinances were in fact rushed in a period of 2 months. But what are these ordinances? There are four sections of the so-called abusive panhandling ordinance that have anything to do with abusive behavior. That has to do with following someone. It has to do with using abusive and foul language. It has to do with being drunk in a panhandling. Now, those are all legitimate concerns.
Do you support those four, Robert?
Sure. They're covered by existing law, Scott. And what you have instead are 20 additional sections which criminalize peaceful, non-abusive behavior. If I ask for a dime after dark in the most respectful manner possible, that's a crime. If I do so twice, I can go to jail for 6 months. I mean, let's be real about this. That's what the law says. It says if I ask for anything, any time of day, peacefully and respectfully at a bus stop, I can go to jail if I do it twice within a period of a month.
I believe that people should be allowed to go to a bus stop and get on a bus without having to be repeatedly hassled by panhandlers. They can be 5 feet away with a sign or asking for a contribution without any interruption, but I believe that people should have the right to step onto a public bus without having to wade through a gauntlet of panhandlers.
The traditional Santa Cruz environment. We're not talking about
Robert, this is Larry. So the traditional Santa Cruz environment is that people stand on the street corners and accost their fellow citizens for money. That is the tradition. Is that what you wish to inform the world that the traditional Santa Cruz environment is?
Let's look at the word accost. We have an assault law which makes it illegal, the state code, to put people in fear of their safety.
Okay, then Robert, very succinctly, if a man...
Hey, wait a minute. Anybody who feels that way can file a complaint.
Robert, we're very interested in structuring in Santa Cruz an alternative to prosecuting people for misdemeanor assault, because I have no interest in somebody going to jail for 6 months because they tried to aggressively panhandle. We're creating a whole different layer.
And the reason I don't believe that's the case is because your police department has arrested at least a dozen people on infraction offenses that are being treated as misdemeanors by the courts. And I'm not talking about misdemeanors. I'm talking about their infractions under city codes.
Robert,
the reason
if
all this is happening is because the city and the county
council are refusing to address the paramount issue which homeless people are concerned with, namely the right to sleep somewhere legally. And when a demonstration occurred to dramatize that point downtown, the response of the council was to criminalize the demonstration. Half of those lives...
Robert, and then I'll tell you, your position that that to accost someone is not intimidating and it's not assault, I would cite to you that a 200-pound white male between the age of 18 and 25, who or literally any age, who walks up to a 65-year-old elderly woman who weighs around 100 pounds, towers over her and asks her for change, in her mind, she is being assaulted. And if you refuse to acknowledge that, then you're not putting yourself in the other person's shoes at all.
Yeah, the reason you're not hearing Robert is because I cracked the pot all the way down. It was just barely cracked open. Robert, thanks for calling. I promised everybody else I'd get a chance to be on the air. There's only 5 more minutes left. Arthur, your turn. You're on the KSCO special.
Yeah, I just want to thank the mayor for putting himself in this position.
Thank you.
Before
I start, but it's appreciated. I've been coming down to Santa Cruz all my life, and I'm a resident here now. When UCSC was being built, my dad said, "There goes the town," and it seems like he was right on the button. I used to go downtown down to Main Street with my wife and walk up and down and enjoy the malls or enjoy the window shopping. And every so often we'd go in and buy something. I wouldn't do that now, and I won't do that now because of the transients or the local hangout people that stay on the Pacific. Also, I think that people, if the police can't catch crime in action or drug transactions in action, I can only suggest that the public get some video cameras and start videoing these things and turning them into the police. And I was out yesterday walking around, and I got into a conversation with two women that were painting the back of a building, and they were part of a volunteer graffiti force.
Yes.
And they said that they had given one woman said her husband had given $1,500 as part of a $3,000 attempt at buying some video equipment to video graffiti artists. And do you know what's been done with the other 1,500? Well, there's 1,500 there, and they were hoping to get 1,500 more. Do you know what's happening on that?
I spoke with the police department probably a month or 6 weeks ago about the video camera, and I had the impression from them that that they were gathering the funds to make this acquisition.
Okay,
if there's a problem with that, again, I'd ask you to call my office. I'll give you the number, and we can follow up on it, because my impression is that that's moving forward. It's 429-3550.
Arthur, thanks very much for calling. Badger, it's your turn.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. Yeah, I was just curious. You guys were talking about these three proposed, or are they already planned movie theaters downtown? And I was just curious if that's going to be cause for probably a lot more loitering.
No, what I
A lot of industrial, let's say Costco's, Home Depot's, some, you know, that's productive. You know, give us wholesale prices, let people go down there and spend their money, and you guys can collect a lot more money versus movie theaters that might just bring in a lot more, you know, trash, you might say.
Yeah.
You know.
I didn't want to create a misimpression. I know what I said, and I can understand the misunderstanding. At one time, what I meant to say is we had three competing theater sites. Right now, two theater sites have received approval, and I think that the clientele they'll bring in will be productive for the whole community. I don't think the problems that you anticipate will be exacerbated. At the same time, we've also taken, I think, significant action with the Costco and other developments.
Roger, Badger, thanks for calling. Now it's Roger's turn. Roger, you're on the air.
Yeah, hey, Michael, I think it's appropriate that you crack the pot on that crackpot Norse.
Oh, okay.
Do you mean that to be a pun?
No, it just sort of slipped out, actually. In fact, Robert must have been calling from real close by, because no matter how I potted down the volume, it wasn't enough. It still sounded distorted, and it was, for all the time he was talking, it was just cracked open, so I finally cracked it closed.
Yeah, well, you're the first one in a long line of pots that need to be cracked, I'll tell you.
Okay, Roger.
Anyway, I just wanted to mention to the mayor that he seems genuinely concerned about the crime problems, but I think if he's really serious about doing something about it, especially with the beach flats and all the hot spots that Al mentioned, that it'd be real simple. All he has to do, if he needs more police and more funding for this, is to start defunding all of his political crony organizations like Arnie Fishman and all those people, stop wasting our public funds on things that are not for a public purpose when there's a more, more urgent public purpose, like public safety, which takes precedence. It's real simple.
I appreciate that you you disagree about the priority given to social service programming. Let me just say that I and most of the other candidates elected to City Council in Santa Cruz are outspoken in our support of these programs. We enjoy the support of the vast majority of people in the City of Santa Cruz who elect us and re-elect us because they want the City of Santa Cruz to try to step in very modest ways to backfill the lack of support from the state and federal governments to fund these programs. The City of Santa Cruz shouldn't be in the business, but we've got in the business because the county, state, and federal governments have forfeited their role in that regard.
I wish we could go on forever here. Roger.
Okay, well, you're going to have to make a decision because we can't do everything. Which is more important? Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Roger. 30 seconds, Ted. Go ahead.
All right. Mayor, I wanted to ask you if you have an affirmative action program in the City of Santa Cruz.
We do have an affirmative action program, a affirmative action committee within the city, and it's staffed by the personnel department.
I don't want to give you another problem, but history has shown that personnel departments cannot adequately maintain or even supervise an affirmative action program.
We're obviously going to have to continue this on another program. Thanks, Mayor Scott Kennedy, for being with us and assuming the hot seat here. Thanks, Larry, Concerned Citizen. Thanks, Ted Jefferson. This is KSCO Saturday Special.
Welcome to the system. quite simply into a world where the ad will become a substitute for the product, and all the satisfactions will be derived informationally from the ad, and the product will be merely a number in some file somewhere.
Cut. How great was that? Is he worth the money?
Okay, here we go, folks. Start the win. And the smoke. And playback.
I need a Pepsi. Cut. That's great. Let's look at these.
Why is this commercial? Why is this commercial? Why is this commercial? Why is this commercial going to sell Pepsi?
Hi, I'm me, and I'm using this to sell you this.
Pepsi. Pepsi.
Hi, I'm me, and I'm using this to sell you this.
Pepsi. Pepsi. Pepsi.
Hi, I'm me, and I'm using this to sell you this.
Feel good about Pepsi. Feel good about Pepsi.
Hi, I'm me, and I'm using this to sell you this.
I need Pepsi.
Pepsi.
It's that last 1 foot, I call it, in the supermarket, where that 1 foot between your hand reaching this direction or that direction is an emotional one.
Why is this commercial?
And that's the bonding you want to get.
Why is this commercial?
1 foot, I call it.
Why is this commercial?
That 1 foot, 1 foot.
Why is this commercial?
1 foot. Cut.
You're picking people to represent traditionally perceived roles for black people. Aunt Jemima, Uncle Ben, the servants, the original role here, the black athletes, use the role that people are comfortable with seeing blacks in to help sell a product. But don't use blacks in roles that are expanding the parameters, that are putting blacks in new and in different settings.
Wicked, insane, evil.
Americans have not been born yet. They're waiting patiently for the past to die. Please give blood. Those crumpled tablets would share a story with a burning bush. Where is that voice from nowhere to remind us that the holy ground we walk on, purified by native blood, has rooted trees whose fallen leaves now color code a sacred list of demands? Who among us can give translation of autumn hues to morning news? The anchor man thrown overboard has simply rooted us in history's repeating cycle, a nation in its saddened years that won't acknowledge karma. Where is that voice from nowhere, the ones your prophets spoke of? There are voices from fear, disconnected from their diaphragms, dangling from coffee-covered teeth that spill into our laps and scorch our privates. There are voices from the sides of necks, some already noosed, dangling participles, pronouns running for sentence, serving life in corner offices and ghetto corners. Their voices are the same, dead to themselves, numb to the possibility of truth existing beyond that which they can palm in their hands, period. There are voices of elders, which seem to do no more than damn us to our childish ways. For in many households, wisdom no longer comes with age. So where is that voice from nowhere? That burning bush, that passing dove? I hear the voices of generals calling for ammunition, presidents calling for arms, women calling for help. Where is that voice from nowhere? That God of Abraham? Can he be heard over the gunfire, the whiz of passing missiles, the crash of buildings, the cries of children, the crack of bones, the shriek of sirens? Or is that his mighty voice? Your angry God craving the sacrifice of virgin generation sons degenerate. Your holy books written in red ink on burning sands. Your prayers between rounds do no more than fasten the fate of your children to the hammer tooth of your trigger. A truth that mushrooms its darkened cloud over the rest of us, so that we too bear witness to the short-lived fate of a civilization that worships a male god. Your weapons are phallic, all of them. That dummy that sits on your lap is no longer a worthwhile spectacle. His shrunken pale face leaves little room for imagination. We have spotted your moving lips and have pinned the voice to its proper source. It is a source of madness, a source of hunger and power, a source of weakness, a source of evil. We have exited your coliseum and are encircling your box office, demanding our families back, our cultures back, our rituals back, our gods back, so that we may return them to their proper source, the source of light, the source of creation, our mother's womb, the great goddess. We will cut through the barbed wire papers and chastity belts. We will climb in and incubate our spirits through the winter. We will wait through the degenerate course of your repeated history. We will wait for the past to die.
model of what we have faced for tens of years. Our nation for 80 years is facing this humiliation, its sons being killed.
What?
Get by this bonus. Break it down like this.
Dr. Martin Luther King. Thank you very kindly, my very dear friends. These churches are really loaded tonight. Never in the history of this nation have so many people been arrested for the cause of freedom and human dignity. You know there are approximately 2,500 people in jail right now. Now let me say this, the thing that we are challenged to do is to keep this movement moving. There is power in unity, and there's power
Mr.
in
Medgar
numbers.
Mr. Evers from Jackson, he's the state field secretary for the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. Mr. Medgar Evers.
Thank you very much, Mr. McDo. Ladies and gentlemen, it's very good to see the number of persons out here tonight that are. And certainly this indicates that we are ready for freedom and we are ready to march for it. I just want to say to you here tonight that the reason I'm up here is because you have given us inspiration in Jackson. And we're going to go back to Jackson, South Mississippi, and all over Mississippi and fight for freedom as you're fighting for it here in Greenwood. All we want you to do is keep going with this fight for freedom. And as we stick together here, as you feel the pains of dogs here in Greenwood, we'll feel them in Jackson. And if we feel them in Jackson, you feel them here. And when we get this unity, ladies and gentlemen, nothing can stop us. We're going to win this fight for freedom. Thank you very much.